Welcome to The Gauge, a new podcast brought to you by Green Gauge, the first fully integrated financial services group, bridging the traditional financial services space with the new digital innovations happening in crypto assets and blockchain. In this series, we gauge expert opinion on the latest tech trends and plan to bring you a measured approach to discussing key developments in the world of blockchain and digital assets.
Welcome to another episode of The Gauge. I'm delighted to have Jonathan Camrose with us, who's a member of the House of Lords. He was also AI Minister under Prime Minister Sunak and is currently Shadow AI Minister. Jonathan, warm welcome.
Thanks very much, Sean.
I'd love to hear first, I've seen you speak at events of tradition and forward thinking. The AI brief is a great one, obviously very au courant. Could you give us a bit of background, how you found AI as a theme and what's your interest in the topic?
I've been interested in AI since I was a child, and I think a lot of people are like that. But in our household, actually, my father, who was a science journalist, wrote one of the very early popular books about AI, nonfiction, a book called The Super Intelligent Machine. And from then, I've always taken an interest. I was, from an early age, blown away by what is still my favorite film, which is 2001, A Space Odyssey. And the scenes with HAL, they've stayed with me forever. Absolutely remarkable. So when I was lucky enough to go to business school in the States at Carnegie Mellon University, where there were courses on AI available as well. So I was taking all those. I took even a couple of classes at Birkbeck later on. So I've always maintained an interest in the possibilities of AI, even when everybody was saying, no, this will never happen. This is nonsense. This is a fantasy until we get to today. So it's always been with me.
I love that you've been thinking about this for a long time. I think for a lot of people, ChatGPT has kind of made it very present. And it's a very exciting time, generally, with the evolution of tech.
The interesting thing about ChatGPT when it came out was it did something totally different to the direction of all AI research, which was, for years, it had been the preserve of neuroscientists or people answering questions about how the human mind worked. And the idea was that AI was a tool to, if we could reproduce the workings of the human mind then in a machine, then we would understand how the human mind worked. And then big data was the absolute crunch. In a way, AI scientists sort of avoided solving the problem they'd set themselves by just throwing a lot of data at it and building complex trial and error mechanisms to infer stuff out of the big data. So it's a weird thing, because although AI had this total breakthrough, it did it by going in a totally different direction to what it had intended to do for the previous at least decade.
I'd love to get your steer. You're in the UK government with your role. What role do you think the UK is playing in frontier technologies like AI? And if I may extend it also to blockchain.
Absolutely. So when I was in the government, we were very keen that the UK should play a very leading role in AI. And the UK has had a history of having a leading role in computer science, from Bletchley Park and Alan Turing, and before that to Ada Lovelace and so on. So an awful lot of the breakthroughs of computer science have come from this country. And if anybody's in any doubt about that, I really encourage you, if you can, to go and visit the Science Museum in Manchester, where you'll see some of the very earliest computing technologies put out there. So we were very focused on making sure that we retained a leadership position in AI. And as far as anybody is able realistically to rank these things, we were at a point where the UK was consistently considered to be the third AI country in the world after, of course, the US and China. And in order to cement that, very early on, Rishi decided to do this conference at Bletchley Park, and we chose to focus that conference on frontier safety of AI, which is the longer term or the further out risks of AI, the classic sci-fi tropes of loss of human agency to a new super powerful species. Our strong view was that AI needed to be adopted very widely if we were going to have a leadership position. And if it was going to be adopted widely, it had to be trustworthy. And that meant that we had to be very open about what we were going to do about what are the safety risks and what are we going to do about it. That was our position there. And I think you ask about crypto. I think very much the same applies. We like to see ourselves, I think rightly, as an inventive nation, as one that we're really a culture of inventiveness, particularly when it comes to new technologies. I wish we were slightly better at operationalizing and exploiting new technologies, but we really are good at coming up with them. And that does make life very exciting, whether you're in crypto or in AI or in quantum or engineering, biology or advanced manufacturing, so on. There's a lot of really fun, interesting stuff, potentially world-changing, going on out there.
It is exciting. And I know one topic you were keen to speak about is the role of AI in recruiting, and people management. And I'd be very keen to hear your thoughts on kind of pros and cons and some opportunities and challenges with AI and how that might influence hiring practices.
Okay. The use of AI in recruiting drives me absolutely crazy at present. So basically, you can dial the clock back to, I am told, medieval times, when the CV or something very like it was first created. Now, it's a process with its roots hundreds of years old for getting a job, which is classifying advertisement, CV, cover letter, series of interviews, either rejection or acceptance, and then negotiation and credential checking after that. And even now, sort of 21st century supported by AI, that's basically the process we're doing. And if I can speak frankly, maniacs are taking this process and making it run at the speed of light. So if you, Sean, decided this afternoon you were sick of it all, you're going to apply for a new job, you would go on LinkedIn and you could apply for a great many jobs just by hitting quick apply. And that would rapidly polish, generate all of your credentials so that anybody who wants to, is considering employing you, must also consider tens of thousands of other applications as well. And of course, needless to say, you can't. So you end up in a system of adversarial AI agents, some polishing the applications and some rejecting the applications. And meanwhile, people go months, even years, very qualified people go a very long time without getting a job. And that's a disaster for the economy. It means those who don't have jobs take a long time to become productive, but it also means those who do have jobs don't dare leave for something else because they don't trust the employment market. And it means that employers who have people that they don't really find as taking their organization forwards in the right way don't dare get rid of anybody because the process for finding the replacement is so deeply uncertain and time consuming. So there is a way that we can adopt to say, okay, let's figure out using these big data inferencing engines of AI, let's figure out, first of all, what kind of person does well at our organization. What are the exact challenges of our organization and what do we want this person to do? And then go out to market and find a person that meets those criteria. A process like that, really, you should be rapidly decreasing the time of the job search, not wasting everybody's time poorly focused on the wrong thing, and greatly increasing the productivity of our economy. I find it very frustrating how pedestrian our thinking is when using these incredible new technologies for driving forward the recruiting agenda.
It's super interesting. Obviously, as someone who has been hired and who hires, we're all intimately familiar with a somewhat tick box approach with human resources functions. And I think there is a danger, as you outlined. I'd just love to hear your thoughts on the way to cut through that. Is this more psychometric testing or something more bespoke?
I think we have to really re-engineer, rethink the whole process. I read the other day, the fastest growing profession in the UK is human resources. And I would like to see professions that directly add to the bottom line of an organization be growing slightly faster than that. But this could be the moment for human resources to step up and go, let's redesign this thing. There is assumed perfect knowledge about what people are on the market and perfect knowledge about what we need, what kind of people we need in our organization. Match those two up at very high speed, and that's what AI does, and find the right people. to me, conceptually, that is absolutely the way to be thinking. And we're not going to get there all at once. But for instance, a very interesting company that I've recently become a director of, a company called Lumi, has one solution to this problem, which is that you don't submit a CV at all. What you do is you participate in an online learning activity in small t teams, not Microsoft teams. As a result of that learning activity, the combination AI and human facilitators form an assessment about which people are the right people to make an impact at that particular organization. And they do so in a way that fundamentally understands the needs of the organization and who's going to work. It also filters out about 80% of applicants who are not willing to participate, because it's quite a commitment to say, I'm going to participate in this learning exercise. It's going to be about 8 or 10 hours of my time as an application for this job, which means you get rid of all of the chances and you only have people who genuinely have an interest in doing that job. Those who get an offer are going to be better and better qualified, even without seeing a CV. Those who don't get an offer, by the way, get a new credential or a new qualification, which is that they'll have learned something very concrete by doing this, which they can then take to market for more suitable roles. So this is the kind of thinking that is going to really boost our ability to get the right people into the right jobs. Having a trusted recruitment market, an efficient recruitment market, is a prize beyond anything. It not only makes the whole country more productive, make the whole economy more productive, but it also, frankly, at a most basic level, makes everybody in that economy much happier. I really think we should be pushing hard at this.
I'm even thinking about the kind of worklessness epidemic, if you will. There might be a way for engaging with people that are looking for jobs.
Absolutely. The best recruiting system in the world doesn't directly create new jobs. Maybe what it does is it removes from people the whole sense of it's pretty pointless applying for jobs, because I never even hear back from anybody when I apply for a job. So what am I doing? I'm just going to stay economically inactive. And that's that. And of course, the longer you do that, the less likely you are to get a job.
This kind of algorithmic approach to recruitment, I'm nervous of tick boxes generally, but I appreciate a healthy funnel. How do you think we obviate some of the negatives around an algorithm as such in a way direct to hire?
I think what really emerges as a theme across any new use of AI is, where is the balance between what the human does and what the AI does? And there's not much that is doable today by AI alone and without a human. And I think this goes double for recruitment. At heart, it's a market for human beings, and you really need humans to be more than in the loop. You need them to be driving the whole process and really second guessing the judgment of the AI. And where that balance is struck is absolutely key. The other point worth making, let me offer it as a kind of thought experiment. Let's say that we could, over time, develop a universal taxonomy of human skills, that every skill it's conceivable for a human being to acquire and develop a level of excellence in, we've got that on a list or in a table somewhere. I don't think that's too far off, actually, particularly if you have mechanisms for adding to that taxonomy. So imagine a very sophisticated and frankly very big AI engine that's able to, over time, assess humans against their scores on those skills, anything from 0 to 100 on every conceivable skill, then you get quite interesting. And by the way, this ties in very much with blockchains. So you wouldn't want everybody to know that all of your skills, but if you're totally unique out of, let's say, there's a million skills available to humans, your unique mix of proficiency in those skills captured secretly in a blockchain, which you can then share in chunks relevant to anybody who wants to employ you or is considering employing you. I think that becomes quite interesting and sort of shifts the bar a little bit towards the machines, but in a way that is fair and could maybe get us to a point of greater automation of the job market. That said, these are very uncomfortable ideas, so tread fairly carefully, but it's an interesting thing to consider.
Yeah, I also know the concept of AI agents or digital workforce is something to play with. Obviously, that is by definition algorithmic. I'd love to hear your thoughts on if we have a future, which is perhaps, and I like the combination of training, or if I may say apprenticeship with sourcing, which uses information to match us. If the quality of that information has been fudged, which I think we've seen can happen with CVs or grades.
You heard it here first.
And that ends up inputting into a calculation. We struggle to get the right outcomes unless there's some truth. I'd be curious to hear your thoughts.
Absolutely. I think the first observation I'd make is more or less any system that you can propose is going to be better than what we have today, because there's a kind of LinkedIn effect, which is that because LinkedIn is full of people frankly showing off about all of their achievements, everybody feels the need to chip in and brag about their own achievements, and there's an inflationary thing. And the Chancellor, who goes, I spent the best part of a decade working at the Bank of England, and that's 5.5 years, so technically yes, to the nearest decade, hence you do get these inflationary things. So I think an objective measure of what has been done does advance you a great deal. The other side of this problem as well is the credential checking. So after most people are offered a job, certainly a professional job, some part of some organization is then tasked with checking their credentials. And they will then go through the CV and go, he claims to have worked at the Bank of England and Goldman Sachs and McDonald's, whatever, and go, right, where can you please confirm Jonathan worked at these places? And if so, was he any good? And what characteristics did he show? And what skills and so on? And in fact, 80% of anybody confronted with this will just say date of employment. They won't even say the job title or the capacity, just the dates. And there are good reasons for this, and fears of getting sued and of getting involved in things that don't help the organization being asked. But it is really difficult to verify any claims on any CV or any claims made by any job seeker. And that's why any improvements, and we have blockchain type of approaches and combined with AI, I think any of those are going to take us forward. They won't solve the problem completely, but they will solve the problem to a very great extent.
Completely agree. I think vetted credentials are always more trusted. I'd love to get also your thoughts on, once the recruitment happens, we now have hopefully a very productive colleague or employee or boss. Do you think AI will impact the nature of the workplace itself day to day? Once everybody's formed into a team, what are some, and this is the crystal ball.
Yeah. So rather than answer that about AI directly, if I may, let's say you've got a perfectly efficient recruiting market. What does that do for the life of people at work? And one impact is, of course, that people, if they're fed up, they'll just leave, because you leave your job on a Monday, you'll have another job on Tuesday. So we'll begin to see a much more mobile workforce. And what that suggests to me is one far more contracting for a particular outcome type of work and less full-time employment work. So it'll start to change the shape away from full-time employees, is my guess. And then the incentives will actually be better aligned, because if, say, I'm going to take a contract to deliver A, B, and C to this organization, and if you leave before delivering A, B, and C, that's really going to count against you in future job markets. So your incentives are quite aligned to get that done.
That's interesting. I'd also, maybe as a final question, but if we think of the nature of education as well, and the idea of perhaps a world where skills are prioritized and the ability to deliver, do you think, again, looking for full and gainful employment in an economy more broadly, do you think we'll see a shift towards more apprenticeships, which are bespoke towards a particular career?
I think you have to. First of all, apprenticeship, and I don't mean a very formal 2-year apprenticeship and all of that, a rapid apprenticeship where it is simultaneously asking you to perform work of value and assessing your ability to do so. And the continuum from apprentice to trusted colleague is always there, but probably a bit steeper going forward. And I really think that will start to be the yardstick against which we judge people. The other thing about education is it is made or broken by the student or the pupil's sort of ability to see a relationship between discretionary effort today and life chances tomorrow. That is an awful lot of research, I believe, backing up that proposition. It's not down to really very much else at all, but students who believe that putting in that extra effort now will get them the better job later, or at least the better life later, that's what makes the difference. So I think when a big challenge or a big opportunity here will be demonstrating to students, start acquiring the right skills you need now, but above all, the number one skill you're going to need is the skill of reinvention, the skill of learning new stuff as you go. And students who over time assemble a track record demonstrating acquisition of new skills as and when they need to will continue to do very well, whereas those in the classic example, those who studied accounting in their 20s and never done anything else, that type of classic career becomes more difficult. It still exists, but it just becomes more difficult.
Super interesting. Resilience and almost the bringing back of the learned societies, people bringing together ways of training themselves.
Completely. The challenges, ed tech as an industry has been incredibly promising for 20 years, and that's the worry. And we've always gone, now ed tech's really going to work. But it's still not, you could argue there's some really interesting stuff being done at the Oak Academy and others, but it's still not game changing in the way that I'm sure it will be. But when?
I always look for passion or a spark to get me excited. I know particular topics, if someone touches you, that for me through tech, but occasionally. I'd love to listen to this again. It's been very thought-provoking. Maybe as a final comment, if you'd like to offer any last insights for our listeners, again, a very big thank you for your contribution.
Not at all. It's been a real pleasure, Sean. A couple of things. Firstly, let's think big picture here, which is that when we properly start using these kinds of techs, and I'm deliberately not just saying AI, but a lot of the tech that is emerging now, when we properly start using that, I think we put ourselves in a position of wiser, wealthier society, living longer and better lives. And I think now is an incredibly exciting time to be bringing this to life. So I really want, whenever I meet people, to share that optimism. It's sort of dangerous too, and we have to be incredibly careful, but we must focus on the prize of that. The other tiny observation I'd make, but I think it is a good example of small steps that can lead to big outcomes, is that the government has just passed, and this was a law that we in government had put forward called as part of the data bill. But part of that is a thing called digital verification services. And that will allow exactly this kind of recruiting model to work, where you can say you have absolute rock solid credentials hidden away secret to everybody until you want to share them. And those credentials are measurable, objective, and workable, and private until you want to share them. So that's a really positive potential that can help us break through in recruiting. It's only a tiny bit of the puzzle, but it's a good example of emerging future possibilities.
It's a very helpful way to start the day. So I'm going to say thank you again for your time.
My pleasure.